Today we're going to go on a journey. And my goal each week, it is, of course, to make the world a better place for horses, but also you, your health, your happiness. When I put these together, that is always in the back of my mind. How can I help support you so you in turn can support your horses? And that's what today is about in starting this discussion on how to feed horses or what to feed horses, but also how can I help save you money? Because that is a big stress all of us experience day in, day out. And back in 2010, I remember at one of our equine committee meetings at the University of Florida, and Dr. Lori Warren and I were getting in a little bit of banter, as we did. And I was joking around with her saying, equine reproduction is the most important aspect of the horse industry. And she shot back, no way, it's equine nutrition. But over the course of my career, especially in the last 15 years, I've got to say, Lori, you won that argument. Nutrition is that important. And when we talk about the information presented today, it reminded me of a story of a student I ran into right when I graduated with my PhD and the complexities of feeding horses and how confusing it can be. And the equine veterinarian for the university called me and said, Dr. Mortensen, we've got a really skinny horse at the student barn. You need to come see it. And I went out there, and yes, this horse was in a body condition score of 3, 3.5. It was skinny. I brought the student in for a meeting, and they were a bit combative. They were giving the horse plenty of hay and felt they were feeding their horse appropriately. But I discussed with them the body condition and that this horse's nutritional needs were not being met. We made some suggestions, which they took, and changed the diet of this horse. And within a month, the student came back and said, Dr. Mortensen, you will not believe the changes in my horse. And when I went out, this horse was in a 4, 4.5 and gaining weight. The student was happy, the horse was happier. And I was happy because I made a positive impact on not only that horse's life, but that student's life. And that's the point of today's podcast. How to make life better, not only for your horses, but for you.
And secretary is being led. He is
the horse.
And the horses are the best thing in the world, isn't it? So I suppose I've always loved them, really, ever since I was a little girl.
Everybody's in line and they're off. And secretary to weigh very well has good position.
The love.
Oh, I never thought owning a horse could mean so much to me.
And secretary not taking the lead.
The madness.
What kind of a horse is that? I've never seen a horse like that before.
Lightning now. He is moving like a tremendous machine.
Their story.
Mustang is more involved in the early development of this breed than I thought they were, but they were.
Chariot has opened a 22-length lead. He is going to be the Triple Crown winner.
Welcome to Mad About Horses.
Hello, I'm Dr. Chris Mortensen. I'm an equine educator, scientist, enthusiast, been doing this for a few decades. Today, we're going to talk about analyzing horse diets, what the information tells us, and why it's important to you. This is going to be the first of many in the future podcasts addressing horse nutrition, horse diets, because like I said, Dr. Warren was right. The foundation of health and welfare for the horse starts with what we're feeding them. Obviously, housing has an impact on that too, but when it comes to a horse's overall health, their ability to perform, their lifespans, their quality of life, it starts with what we feed them. So it's that important. And then it also impacts you. So today we're going to talk about costs and the concerns that you all have. It is expensive to feed a horse day in, day out, but it doesn't have to be as expensive as it is for many of us. The other aspect is horse nutrition and dietary advice. It gets so confusing. And whenever I think of walking into the feed rooms of so many facilities in my career, I remember seeing all the different bags of feed, all the different types of supplements. And then I remember my days working at the racetrack when we literally had at least 10 bags, and I can still smell that apple flavoring to this day. But it was some of this, some of that. Here's the grain, mix it all up, and then feed the horse, and we hung up some bags of hay. It was confusing. What nutrients do horses need? And the good news is we have much more clarity in 2024 as I record this than we did in the 1990s when I started down this road of studying horses and physiology. Why? Why has that changed? As I've said in previous podcasts, there has been so much research in horse nutrition around the world. Excellent data coming out of Europe, excellent data coming out of the United States and Canada, South America, and then Asia, Australia, New Zealand. All around the world, there has been incredible amounts of research done on how to feed horses properly. And so looking at this diet analysis of what the trends are shows a lot of insight and gives us ideas on, okay, we're feeding a little bit much here, so we could probably cut our feed bill if we feed a different feed, or as I'll explain later in the podcast, or, wow, we have some deficiencies that we need to be concerned about, which impacts health, hoof care, healthy hooves and top line and body condition, metabolic disorders, all of these things can be traced back to diet for many of these instances. So that's why it's so important. And again, that's why you should care. I also am going to be clipping in some comments from my colleague, Dr. Priska Durrani, who's our director of research. And she has a PhD in equine nutrition, does a lot of dietary analysis, does a lot of research and formulating feeds for horse owners. So asked her what this diet analysis tells us, because when we look at the data for the year 2021, we analyzed over 6,515 individual diets. That is some powerful information. This is looking at horses all across North America, but is very applicable to horses in Europe, horses in Asia, Australia, New Zealand, Middle East, wherever you live. This information could be leveraged, and we all feed horses similarly. So this is applicable to all of you listeners around the world. So just to set this up, how did we get information on 6,515 diets? I asked Priska where they got all the data from, and this is what she had to say.
So anyone can go through the diet evaluation process with us. On the main page of the website, there's an Analyze Diet button that you can click on, and that'll take you to the form. There's also links in articles that will also take you to this form. And basically, the form is going to ask you information about your horse and also what they are being fed. You can also indicate any health concerns you have or what their body condition is. And then there's also a comment box where you can write in anything you also want us to know, any of their health history that you want to provide details on. And then that will be submitted to our nutritionists, who can then respond back to you.
Just really quickly here, if you go to the Mad Barn website, top right, Analyze Diet, you can submit your information there. It's free, no strings attached, and you'll have a nutritionist look at your diet and give you some suggestions or alterations if needed. They're going to look at things like age, the weight of the horse, body condition score of the horse, the activity level. Is it light to very heavy? Exercise. Breeding status. Is this a brood mare or just a riding leisure horse? And then any of those individual health needs that we all run into. Is your horse prone to laminitis? Has it had colic before? Rough coat? Poor top line? Anything you're concerned with, you submit that information and then a qualified equine nutritionist will get back to you. But wherever you live in the world, you should consider speaking with an equine nutritionist. Whoever that is, they will help you look at the diet of your horse, look at your hay quality, look at the feeds that you're giving, and then be able to guide you into meeting your horse's needs, especially if you're performing. If you're going out and competing, you want your horse's diet looked at. But even the ones in our backyard companion animals, they need it too because we want to give them the best lives possible, right? So I can't emphasize it enough. And later in the podcast, I'll talk a little bit more about it just as far as what an equine nutritionist can do for you. But when we look at things like obesity and how that's increased in our horse population, it's a concern. And I just did the podcast, Is There an Equine Obesity Epidemic? And the data showing that out of the United States, the American Association of Equine Practitioners reports 51% of all the horses they looked at were in a body condition score of greater than 6, and that's using the Hennecke 1 to 9 system. So 6, 7, 8, 9, those are all overweight or obese horses. That is going to lead to so many health problems, increased vet bills, shortened lifespans. That's why it's a concern. And again, that's back to diet. Then when we look at deficiencies, it's not something I've talked a lot about in the podcast yet, and there are some in the future planned as far as like healthy hooves. That is a big concern for all of us. But if we have diets that are low in copper, zinc, biotin, or other key nutrients, those hooves are weak. And that could even lead to laminitis, shortened lifespans, euthanasia. Then we look at things like selenium, vitamin E, antioxidants. I'm going to talk about this a little bit later in the podcast, but those are all lacking in many of these diets. So these micronutrients that we don't hear a lot about are so critical for your horse's overall health and well-being and then your pocketbook. Because when you look at survey after survey, what are the horse owner's concerns? Well, here's one. Morris Animal Foundation asked horse owners in the United States, what were their top three concerns? Number one, nutrition. Number two, laminitis. Number three, colic. And I could argue laminitis and colic are all nutritionally related or could be. So horse owners are definitely concerned about nutrition for their horse. Then when we look at costs and costs of living, especially now today in the post-COVID era, this is becoming even more in the spotlight. Because if you read message boards or you read popular press articles, horse owners are also struggling to pay their feed bills, pay their boarding bills, on top of trying to feed their families and pay their fuel. Many of us around the world are feeling the impacts of inflation. And that's being highlighted in the horse industry. Now, when we talk about costs of keeping a horse, the feed bill was about 50% of their yearly costs. Vet bill was just under 20%. Whenever I would go and talk to horse owners, whether individually or give talks, whenever I talk nutrition, I'm always like, okay, how can I save you money? And I could see people lean forward in their seats because it is expensive to keep a horse and we tend to overfeed them. That's why we see an obesity epidemic, which means we're spending more money than we need to. In another survey just released a couple years ago, the AHP Equine Industry Survey, horse keeping costs have gone way up. To quote this survey, they said, feed, including both hay and concentrates, continues to be the most frequently identified area in which horsekeeping costs have increased. And then it's followed by veterinary services and animal health products. And that's just in the last 3 years that they've gone way up. And you're feeling it. For those of you listening, you're like, yep, definitely feeling it. And where that has impact is some people are having to give up their horses. And I remember specifically in the 2000s, this was around 2007, 8, 9, when we had a downturn in the economy, I was getting calls from the state that there was horses being let loose in national parks because people couldn't afford to keep them. And that was happening across the United States. And then in this latest survey last year out of the United Kingdom, the impact of the rising cost of living on equine rescues, rehoming centers, and sanctuaries, they are getting horses at record levels. And that's because 40% of the respondents said the costs have gone up so much that they can't afford to keep their horses. So the purpose of highlighting this is, again, when we look at what we're feeding, we can be more strategic in what we're feeding to try to lower that feed bill. And I'm going to get there. The other aspect of this is the cost of hay. I can remember when bales were like $8 US, maybe $7 of grass hay in the day. Now we're seeing upwards of $12. I've seen upwards of $20 when I'm looking at different hay reports coming out of the United States. I'm going to talk in US dollars. But just in the United States, the cost of alfalfa has gone through the roof. I'm looking at these prices going, holy smokes. So I'm looking at an article from Hay and Forage Grower published just last month. They said the peak of alfalfa prices was at $287 per ton in April of 2023. Now, thankfully, those prices have come down, but still they're hovering around $200 per ton. And that was up from $150 in 2020. Grass hays are being reported $171 per ton in January of this year in 2024. And that, to quote them, they said the gap of $31 between the alfalfa and grass hay prices is now the narrowest it's been since January 2021. And that is tough for us because hay is the foundation of a horse's diet. And when you boil down the costs of feeding your horse, hay should be the bulk of that cost. So when you're looking at the costs per day, looking at some average prices in the Southeast United States, I was seeing anywhere from, like I said, $12 up to $18 per bale for some good quality grass hays. That's like $3 to $5 per day if you're feeding 1.5% of body weight for a 1,000-pound horse. So you're feeding 15 pounds of hay per day. Probably closer, horse should be getting 20 pounds. So that could be, you know, anywhere from $4 to $6 a day. Round math. This is just averages. If I want to feed a more nutrient-dense hay, like an alfalfa timothy mix, I'm looking upwards of $18 to $20 a bale. So that's upwards of $6, $7, $8 per day. Okay, that's just in hay costs. Then if we're using bagged feed and feeding the feeding rate recommended by the manufacturer, so anywhere from like 8 pounds of feed to 14 pounds of feed per day, that's an additional $5 to $10, roughly. Now, if you're feeding a ration balancer, that's fed at a low rate. So you're feeding like 2 to 3 pounds per day. So those costs are more manageable. But back in the day, feeding a horse hay and then scooping them some grain was pretty common. Some of you are still doing that. And today you'll probably notice there's been a shift in the last few years where equine nutritionists, and the research is showing this, is that we need to feed more forage and then less of the sweet, sticky feeds that we fed from yesteryear. I mean, the molasses covered feeds, oh, they smell so good. Don't taste that well to us, but they smell so good, right? Those days are past us. We don't need to be feeding that anymore because they're so high in sugars and starches, which was leading to metabolic disorders, which again is another podcast down the road. The point is, forage should be the bulk of your cost. Then you add something like a vitamin mineral mix, $1 to $2 a day, depending on the quality of the mineral mix that you're using. So if you're looking at what this information is showing us, it should help guide you on some of those decisions that you're making on what you're feeding your horse. Again, if you talk to an equine nutritionist, they'll be able to look at your hay, your bagged feed if you're feeding it, any supplements. Let's say you're adding a hoof supplement. You're adding copper and zinc on top of a bagged feed, on top of your hay. For all you know, you're already meeting all that copper, zinc, biotin, and everything else that's in that hoof supplement. You may not need it. And that's the point of this, that more's not better, but then we have to identify those deficiencies too, because that could lead to health. And I know why you're feeding that hoof supplement. I know why you're feeding that joint supplement. You love these animals. You want the best for them. And you're like, you know what? If I spend a few more dollars per day and you're healthier, that's fine. That means I can't go out to dinner on Friday. I get that. We all make those decisions. But the whole idea of when it comes to diet is we just want to meet their needs. That's it. You want to meet their needs, what this horse needs to grow properly, put on muscle, maintain good body condition, and be healthy. Okay. So just to give you an idea, if you submitted your diet analysis to madbarn.com, again, free, no strings attached, I asked Priska, who's the team looking at this? And this is what she had to say.
All our nutritionists have a graduate degree, so either a master's of science or a PhD in equine nutrition or a related field such as equine physiology, for example. So they would have done several nutrition and physiology courses during their degree to have a full picture of how to support horses.
Now, I asked her that because I think it's important that whoever you talk to look at your horse's diet, make sure they have the background in equine nutrition. When you're talking about a master's level or especially a PhD or even some of these DVMs that specialize in equine nutrition, remember, these are horse people. They're focused on horses. They read the studies. They keep up to date. That's important because just a quick story here. I remember in the 2000s when this whole idea of fat, horses digest fat really well. They utilize it really well. And I remember the Equine Science Society meeting where that research started coming out. And then 2 years later, it seemed like the whole conference was talking about fat in horse diets. Very nerdy, I know, but that's where we were. And now you see today in the 2020s, when we look at energy sources, we look at fat versus sugars and starches because we want to get away from these sugars and starches. But now we know you can't just throw fat into the diet. They have to be slowly added, and there's different ways of feeding fat. The point is the information is being updated all the time, and you want an equine nutritionist that is going to these conferences, that is reading the literature, that is in the industry and isn't giving you advice that we gave 20 years ago or even 10 years ago. It's changing that quickly because there's so much great research. So again, that is why you should be excited because there is a lot of spotlight in this area when it comes to horses. Also, you want to make sure it's just not marketing people, pushing a product, pushing a business or something like that. And I'm hyper aware when I talk in these podcasts, I'm just saying, here's free information, here's free analysis, here's free stuff. I'm pushing free educational material. That is what matters to me. So now we can look at what the overall data shows. Getting the meat and potatoes of this diet analysis. Again, 6,515 individual horse diets. I asked Priska, what were the overall trends? And this is what she had to say.
From the diets that were submitted, we can look at characteristics of the horses and also characteristics of the diets. So when we look at the horses, we see that they're very reflective of the general horse population in North America, in that many of the horses were in light or moderate work, so school horses, for example. And we also saw that roughly 30% were indicated as either overweight or obese, which is similar to other studies that have found around 40% of the equine population is overweight. And we see similar agreements between our data set and what other surveys have found in terms of the prevalence of health concerns around things like hoof health or joint health that are quite prevalent in the equine population.
So I also found some of this information interesting, where the average age was 12 and a half years old, but they actually had a horse that was 42 years old. They actually had a donkey that was 46 years old. Like, my goodness, really getting up there in age. The most common breed was quarter horse. That was 26%, followed by thoroughbreds, 18%. That's not very surprising coming out of North America. Now, let me preface this. All of these dietary suggestions are based off the National Research Council's manual on nutritional requirements of the horse. I have one next to me. It's very thick, dense book on equine nutrition. It is the nutrition Bible that around the world scientists use to look at horse and horse diets. Many of my colleagues and mentors were part of the NRC putting this together many years ago, basing all of the requirements of a horse on decades of research. So that is where these dietary recommendations come from. The point is, just because it was a lot of quarter horses doesn't mean the diets aren't similar, because in the NRC, it's not broken down by breed. It's broken down by, say, size of the horse. So an 1,100 pound or 500 kilogram quarter horse, then is that in light work, moderate work, heavy or very heavy work, and then other suggestions. That is where the dietary comes in, that 1,100 pound quarter horse that's at moderate work needs this amount of protein, this amount of energy, this amount of selenium, sodium, all these other vitamins, minerals, things like that, okay? So the suggestions are for all horses of the same size and work. So when I asked Priska what the trends were, and then the excesses, what were some concerns or things that were important to highlight? And this is what she had to say.
It's very common to see an oversupply of protein in diets because the forages in North America are generally quite good quality. So relative to the horse's requirement for protein, it is often oversupplied. But that doesn't necessarily mean that there's a significant concern for most horses. Where we might see issues is in horses that are in barns for most of the day, and the excess protein in the diet means they'll be excreting a lot of urea in the urine, which can ultimately irritate their lungs when they're breathing in that high ammonia air. And also, if we think about performance horses, we might want to be more careful about their protein supply, because it could affect their water balance overall. But in general, you know, if the diets are naturally high in protein just from the forages alone, it's usually not too much of a concern. The excess energy in diets can come from the forages too, or it could be due to feeding too much of additional feeds that are not necessary for that horse. Again, it's important to keep in mind that it's relative to the NRC requirements, and simply oversupplying doesn't necessarily mean that a horse will gain weight. For example, a hard keeper might not gain weight when calories are at 100% of requirement, whereas maybe an easy keeper would be gaining weight at that level. So we need to take into account the individual horse. And we also need to think about it in terms of, are we wanting that horse to gain weight? So adding more calories being above the requirement is something you might be wanting to do. Whereas if you want them to lose weight, then you're going to want to reduce some of the excess calories in the diet and looking at ways to reduce the feeds in a safe way for that horse, and maybe also having to reduce calories from the forage as well. And yes, we also see that iron is basically always oversupplied because, again, the amount coming from forages will already be providing excess iron. So the main thing to be aware of here is not feeding supplements or feeds that have added iron specifically as an ingredient to that feed or supplement. Because the horse really doesn't need any more. They're already getting more than enough from the forages alone.
Now, she opened up with protein, which is funny because as an educator, I would always go and talk to horse owners and ask them, raise your hand if you walk into your horse's stall and you just get hit in the face with that ammonia smell. And I always have a few raise their hands. And I said, that's probably because you're feeding too much protein. I've been there, walked into a horse stall going, woof, you know, what are you eating? And we used to always say, hey, feed a 14% feed or a 12% feed or a 10% feed. And that was indicative of the crude protein in it. And that was what drove the price up. Like a 10% bag of feed was generally cheaper than a 14% or 16% bag of feed. And I was telling horse owners how to save money. You're feeding too much protein. They're getting plenty in their forage. Now, if they are a performance horse on that heavy or very heavy workload, they might need some additional protein or what is broken down into amino acids, these essential amino acids. Or it may be just a horse with an individual need. So maybe we need to add some protein. But we tended to feed too much protein. And then the energy, talked about it, this obesity epidemic, calories. We're overfeeding our horses because we love them so much. And I go back to my early days in graduate school where we are feeding straight corn, steam crimped corn. I remember scooping it into buckets and feeding our herd of 80-something horses on top of high-quality alfalfa hay. We had okay pastures, but we were in California, so we had access to really good alfalfa hay. I can only imagine what those horses were going through metabolically because our understanding's changed so much in 20 years, but never would I feed that to a horse today. We never want to feed corn anymore. It's too high in starch. It leads to metabolic disorders and other issues in horses. And alfalfa hay is such high quality, we really want to try to mix that with a grass hay. But again, that's a whole different podcast. The whole point is feeding too much energy or adding bagged feed because that's what people do, and I'm just feeding this because that's what a good horse owner does. We need to rethink it. We really do, because that's adding too much energy in the diet and putting on too much weight. That's why you're seeing this big push on forage-based diets. That's the foundation. Get back to the basics. This is what horses are doing out in the wild. When you observe horses with plenty of forage, they like to graze 50, 60% of the day. So that's why we're pushing as educators and scientists. We want to extend feeding time, grazing time, so they mimic their natural behavior. That has welfare implications, but also nutritional. Then we look at the forage and evaluate it there and say, okay, where are the gaps? And I'll talk about deficiencies here in a second. So energy is obviously a big concern. And if you're feeding bagged feed, why? Why? What's its purpose? And if you are feeding that sweet, sticky feed, please, please, please talk to a nutritionist and have them look at the diet and see if they can give you some recommendations, because the high sugar starch will lead to issues down the road for many horses. Okay, and then too much iron, she did talk about that. So you don't need to add that to the diet. There is a good article, madbarn.com, Learn Tab, 5 Dangers of High Iron Levels for Horses. It was written by Priska. You can read that. But when we look at macro and micronutrients, we don't want to feed it in excess, right? More is not always better. And you have to be careful with that. But then we look at the deficiencies, especially with these trace minerals, these micronutrients. So I asked Priska about that, and this is what she had to say.
The deficiencies we see most commonly are in minerals, things like sodium, again, because forages don't usually provide enough. But luckily, this is an easy fix. You can just feed salt. So we usually recommend feeding 1 to 2 tablespoons of salt, add it directly to the feed, and then always having loose free choice salt available at all times. Other deficiencies that we often see are in things like selenium or vitamin E. And these can impact the overall health of the horse. So a horse that is deficient in these antioxidants might take longer to recover from exercise or from illness. And in general, these trace mineral and vitamin deficiencies have more subtle effects that could be affecting your horse's health over time. So these effects might take a long time to become apparent. But you might see things like your horse's hooves not being as healthy anymore or growing slowly, or you might see your horse start to lose top line. And those things could be signs that there's some underlying deficit in the diet that needs to be addressed.
Now, here is where I know for me, early on in my career, I was a little bit confused. And maybe I wasn't paying as much attention in my advanced equine nutrition courses. And I was thinking about my embryology course that I had coming up, or a test or a biochem test. But wherever you are in the world, your forage will be deficient in something. Now, it's going to depend on where you live or where your forage was grown. But let's say, for example, here I live in New Zealand now. One of the things I was not aware of, for me personally, was our foods are really low in iodine. I did not know that. And this might be TMI, but I was getting really itchy skin. Anytime I would itch it, it would get into like rashes. And I couldn't figure out why. And then I come to find out my food here is deficient in iodine because we don't have iodine in our soils. And so all the produce I eat that's grown here doesn't have any. I wasn't getting much in my diet. And we see that in our horses, like selenium. Selenium is one that many of you probably heard about. Vitamin E, selenium, these antioxidants, they're deficient in many horse diets. And I'll explain to you why. And why is selenium important? Well, as an antioxidant, many of you have heard that or know what it is, but during regular cellular metabolism, the cells produce these things called free radicals, which are damaging to other cells. So things like aging, they think, is due to some of these free radicals. Also, certain diseases or health disorders is because of these free radicals. Antioxidants like selenium, vitamin E, and there's others, they produce enzymes that neutralize the free radicals, destroy them. So they keep the body in balance, this homeostasis that the body's constantly fighting for. When you have a diet deficient in antioxidants like selenium in the horse, they are going to have more free radicals, more cellular damage, which could lead to a shorter lifespan and other health issues or that expensive vet bill. Again, this is why diet is so important. Yes, Lori Warren, Dr. Lori Warren, you win that debate. It does start with nutrition. Nutrition is very important and is important in repro. Started me down that path of nutritional impacts on reproduction with her. But to stay on selenium, so if you live in the United States, and this is for me, I lived on the West Coast. And then I moved to the East Coast. Both areas are really low in selenium. So our pastures for our horses were low in selenium. Then when you look at Washington State, Oregon, Idaho, California, New Mexico, where they grow a lot of alfalfa and ship it to other parts of the country, that hay is deficient in selenium. And then you go to Florida, sandy soils, there's not much selenium there either. So just looking at this one, which there's many, like I said, I already said iodine, there's many, but looking at this one, your hay's deficient. It would be deficient in other nutrients. They talked about sodium being really low in this diet analysis. Zinc, copper, so when you're looking at hoof health, iodine, just like here, vitamin D, thiamine, all of these are deficient in many of the horse diets analyzed. So it is something that you need to look at. And then there's electrolytes. So if you have a horse that sweats a lot, just like us, when we sweat, we lose electrolytes. They need sodium and they need others. So maybe that horse might need some sort of supplement into their diet. So when we look at the foundation of a horse's diet being forage, there isn't a horse on earth that could survive on just forage alone and have long lives, high performance. Now, you say the wild horses, yes, they do. But their average lifespan, we know, is 8, 9, 10 years, maybe some in the 20s, very rarely into the 30s. They don't have these long lifespans. And they don't have a human on their back. They're not going over jumps all day or dressage or running around barrels or doing cutting and reining, all these different disciplines that requires more nutrients to do, right? And do well. So when we look at forage only, we start with forage in the diet, but then we identify the gaps. And that's what, again, your equine nutritionist will be able to do and say, okay, let's do a hay analysis, which is going to change from year to year, but look at your hay. Okay, your hay or your pasture is deficient in these nutrients. Your horse, according to the NRC, needs this amount per day. Well, let's add a vitamin mineral mix and we cover most everything. And then, oh, well, you know, you're doing this event or this or that. Maybe we add X, Y, Z, you know, something like that. I will put a caveat here too. If you are feeding a vitamin mineral mix, you're like, okay, how do I give it to the horse? I can't just open their mouth here, take your horse vitamin. If you need a carrier to help, look at adding beet pulp. You don't need very much, and you can divide it up into your meals twice per day, and you can just soak it a little bit and add this vitamin minerals to it, mix it up. The horse should eat it or eat it well. A lot of horses eat beet pulp well. I know there's some exceptions, so you could look at adding something different to help carry it, or there is vitamin minerals that are fed in pellets. The whole idea is you don't need a 50-pound bag of feed to get the horse extra vitamins and minerals that they need day in, day out. But how do you figure all this out? Because, again, you know, this is just the overall broad picture. And in future podcasts, I'll go more in depth. But it can be so confusing and so overwhelming. And, again, that's where I'm saying get an equine nutritionist in to look at what you're feeding, and they'll give you solid advice. But if you want to do something fun, there is a free tool available that you can use just to get you going down this path of looking at what you're feeding your horses and what they need. If you go to madbarn.com, under that Learn tab is a nutrition calculator. It's a fun, free tool. And you click on that. You will notice there is a how to use this tool tab. You can click on that and there's a video with Prisca showing you how to use it. But it's going to ask you first, what's your forage? And then it's also going to ask you your location, because that's going to give you an idea of the forage composition of where you live. Then it's going to ask you what's your feeding program. So there's a whole database on common feeds in North America. You can go in there, input it, and how much you're feeding. Then you're looking at things like activity levels, all things that will impact what the NRC says your horse should be getting per day. Once you calculate the diet, it will spit out information on how much nutrients your horse should be getting per day, and if there's any deficiencies, or you can see the excesses. So you're looking at, you know, how many calories, the crude protein, the essential amino acid like lysine, all of those important vitamins and minerals, and that'll at least give you an idea. So go use it. It's free. Again, you just click on it. It's a website. You can use it on your phone. But just be aware, this is general guidelines. This isn't professional advice. This isn't saying, oh, you know, you need to do this, this, and this. You should speak to a qualified equine nutritionist. But again, information's powerful. And when I asked Priska, what is the take-home message on this data? This is what she had to say.
I think the take-home message is that nutrition can be tailored to the individual horse, but there are some universal recommendations that can be applied to basically all horses. So for example, all horses should be on a forage-based diet, ideally with that forage matching their calorie needs so that they can have free choice access without having that significant oversupply of calories. And then always make sure your horse is getting salt and has access to salt so their sodium requirement is met, but it's also a good thing to do so that they are encouraged to drink more water. So overall, it's important to remember that forages will provide energy and protein, but whether you're talking about pasture or hay, it'll always be deficient in several minerals and vitamins. But luckily, there are several cost-effective, well-balanced products that are available to address this, to make sure that regardless of what you're doing with your horse, you can make sure you're meeting all their vitamin and mineral requirements.
So just to take this home, understanding how to feed your horse is so critical to their overall well-being, their overall health, their performance level, their lifespans. And before I sign off, I do want to let you know, within a few weeks, we will be launching our first free online introduction to nutrition course. We're just putting the finishing touches on it now. That should be out very soon. So monitor this podcast and all our socials once that goes live, and it will talk you through a lot of this. We do have an advanced equine nutrition course in the works. That's in the planning stages. That is down the road. But, you know, the whole point of it is me, you, and everybody in the horse industry, we just want what's best for our animals. And in turn, when they are taken care of and you're not spending excess money in veterinary bills or feed costs, your life improves. Because they do. This companionship, it's second to none. It's, you know, how do we ensure our horses have the best lives so you, in turn, can live your best life? Welcome back. I just want to say thank you to all the 5-star reviews you've given on iTunes or Spotify. If you haven't, if you don't mind just going in there really quick. Quick 5 stars, quick comments. It means the world to me. It increases circulation. So Spotify and iTunes will pick up the podcast and show it to more people. And it helps us grow. Also, for those sharing on social media, thank you. Seeing bump in numbers, seeing followers all around the world. But when you share, it really helps. It helps get this information out. And again, we want to make the industry as robust and as strong as possible. And you're helping do that. And I guarantee you, somehow, some way, you're making a horse's life better when you do that. So thank you. Also, check us out on our socials, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, all of those. That's where the announcements are coming. That free introduction to nutrition course, like I said, is in the finishing stages, should be launched here soon. So watch those spaces. And it goes more in depth into this, where we're talking about the basics of nutrition and why we feed horses the way we do today, say versus yesteryear. I still remember shovels of corn because we didn't have a lot of money at the university to feed our horses. And anyways, we wouldn't dare do that today. This was decades ago. Also, any comments, you can always email me podcast@madbarn.com. I love the interactions we're getting there. Thank you. Thank you for the feedback. And any topics, like Madison wanted horse personalities, did it last week. please email me and I will add them to the list because you have some great ideas. Thank you for listening. Thank you for caring about your horses, and take care.